system. I find you in the shows and moving are great. And being a nerd, the sign system is everywhere you go.
Uno, dos, tres. Welcome to the Design Systems Podcast. It's a Thursday morning today. I had a few sips of coffee, so I'm raring to chat today. How are you, PJ?
Yeah, I'm well. And I was just thinking before jumping on of like my energy level and how much different it is in the morning with a cup of coffee versus at the, you know, the mid or end of the day. So definitely more energetic than typical.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I feel like I could go here and there. I love to just hit the ground running in the morning. So it's good to experiment and get feedback on when we record and how those recordings are, which goes through a little bit of our topic today is just user feedback in design systems.
Is everything okay over there?
Yeah, I got some bad user feedback downstairs. but going back to this, some of our product designer roots and understanding how to collect feedback from, you know, stakeholders or customers, wanted to talk a little bit about different methods that you've seen, PJ, with like either stakeholder interviews, user interviews with design or engineering, consumers of the system, or more specifically, survey. Since we did mention that last podcast, and you're going through a survey, and then I just recently launched a survey, so very, very top of mind for us.
Yeah, it's a super fun topic and something that our team in particular puts a lot of time and attention into. Maybe for myself, maybe too much. I really agonize over those survey results because they mean a lot to us. But that's been something we've been doing for the last 2 years. If we could do more, we would. But we also don't want to bombard our peers within Pinterest with survey after survey. So we have to be smart and space them out a bit.
And then I think we'd mentioned in the last, I don't remember if this was either on the podcast or just, you know, when we're chit-chatting, like how often are you sending out these surveys? And also what is the length, approximate length that you're looking for designers, engineers to fill these things out?
Yeah. So we send them out and we send one out to engineering, one out to design. A lot of the questions are consistent in language. We worked with the research team to develop the language for the questions to make sure that we weren't messing it up. And the sample size varies. I mean, they're optional. And so, but anytime you ask people to fill out a survey, it's an uphill battle, and understandably so. So we try to keep the survey as short as possible. And that's one thing I even mention when I send out the comms is, hey, this should take you 5 minutes. This should take you 10 minutes. Try to, you know, really, really lean on this is, we're trying to keep this a small burden. So that's another thing that we are oftentimes talking about is what questions can we cut? Do we have enough signal on this? Is this question even important anymore? Can we cut it just for the sake of reducing the length so we can ensure that we have as much participation as possible?
Had a few run-ins, I would say, with surveys and of different flavors. So that's something that I wanted to talk to you a little bit about too. Previously at Disney Streaming, there's a few methods of surveys or types of surveys that we sent out, like ones that were more sentiment focused, just to understand very broad strokes. Originally, the first survey that my previous manager had sent out was really trying to understand very foundational, like, did we meet the needs, you know, for you to build XYZ thing for this year? Those, I think, were very good just to show demand and show interest in the system. And then as we've sent out the second, third, fourth survey, we've sort of evolved it. The second and third ones were more sentiment focused. Second and third one also had near identical questions, so I was able to run them. We did them annually, just to, for whatever reason, I think that was just a good cadence for us just to not get survey fatigue. But we were able to track that over time. The fourth survey that we sent out at Disney Streaming was a different one, not sentiment focused, but the SUS, like system usability scale, 10 questions, specific framework. Benefit of this one also is that it's doesn't take a lot of time to administer, doesn't take a lot of time to take, but also we're able to gather a score and then track that score over time. So that's something that at Meta I'm getting done for this half as well. And the reason why I wanted to move away from the sentiment survey was you do get mixed results. We're trying to understand specifically what the pain points were. Ironically enough, there's at the bottom of our survey, we just have like an open text box. And we found out in my instance now is that there's some gaps in our Figma component libraries. Very extremely achievable and very, very tactical feedback. So this half, my system usability survey is focused thematically on the component libraries. Last half, it was focused a little more broadly, but then there was a more of a tune towards support. So something else that we're thinking through is possibly running this system usability survey, but for different facets of the system. So we've done support, we've done component libraries. We'll probably do something like education as like another one.
Could you dig into what specific questions you ask for the usability survey?
They're extremely, if you Google SUS survey, it's, I could go through some of them right now. So it's a list of 10 questions. And what we're really trying to gather is whether the capabilities meet your requirements, whether the system is a frustrating experience, whether the system is easy to use. Another question that I thought was very interesting in there is like whether you need guidance to use this thing, whether you need, if you are a new person on the you would not need much support to get up and running. So there's very specific pointed questions and we're able to, there's like a scoring mechanism on there and hopefully we sort of track the score and tick up. One thing that we're just looking to tick up is like, if it's a very tactical thing that we're trying to fix, say like provide more coverage in the Figma libraries, hopefully next half when I run the survey again, then we'll see an uptick on that.
We are talking with the research team about adjusting our surveys. So first off, tangent, if you're on the design systems team, the research team is your best friend. Hopefully you have a research team and hopefully you can work with them because they are going to make your life profoundly for a myriad of reasons. Hopefully surveys are just one data point of what of input that you're getting in, but there's also research interviews, there's all sorts of ways to collect input from your customers, but a researcher can help make sure that you're asking questions in a non-biased way. They can help you calculate it. So I was talking to a quant UX researcher who's amazing, and she was giving me tips on how to calculate some of the scores. We are fortunate enough on the engineering side to have high scores, so much so that it was getting difficult to track increases in satisfaction because we were collecting data on a Likert scale, so 1 to 5, and we had like 93, low to mid 90s satisfactions for most of our metrics. But what we were seeing is a lot of the 4s were flipping over to 5s, and that number wasn't calculated. It wasn't showing that, right? And so I, you know, in my infinite folly, said, "Oh yeah, I'll just calculate a different way." And a colleague on the UX quant UX research team was like, don't do it that way. Here's how you do it. Here's how I suggest it. So don't do what I did and just read something and say, oh, we can apply that. Talk to the research team. They're going to have much more mature and thought through rigorous thinking behind how you ask the questions, how you calculate the questions. I mean, how you calculate the responses, and then how you share those out to the broader group. So they've been huge partners in our process, and they're helping inform how we might even adjust our surveys in the future.
I think the thing with research is and you know, I'll be honest about this, specifically like when it's something that you're getting feedback on that is tactical, like gaps in the library or things that you need to fix, possibly like on the education side or the documentation side, it's likely that we know like what the issues may be. But what we're looking to do is validate this. And like that's sort of like a little bit of the trap, I guess, with the usability and how it's used is, yeah, we are at the end of the day trying to just validate some assumptions. And we're really trying to specifically, like when we're doing these surveys at the end of a half, we're looking to get buy-in to continue to do this sort of work or continue to do some additional work to hopefully improve, you know, the issues that we see.
To that end, the surveys are great to get a broad view, but every single time I look at the survey results, I look at the number and say, but why? Why is it like that? What specifically are they interested in? And so that's where we try to have follow-up questions with respondents. So one of the questions we ask at the end is, hey, can we reach out to you for follow-up questions? And then we do, right? Because, and even oftentimes when people fill out, you know, when they do respond to, you know, why did you answer it this way? We still need more detail. And so that's another thing I would just plan for is you're going to get the survey. And if you get a decent amount of responses, great. But then it would benefit you to dig in. So one of the things that we heard this half is, you know, people want more examples, more documentation examples. Okay, great. Which ones? What kind? You know, how in depth? Is it broad? Is it deep? You know, is it just one component that we need to really improve examples on? Or do we have to do them all? You can't, it's hard to act on that until you have a firm understanding of what that means. Otherwise, you're still in guess mode, which is not great. And so that's another thing that we account for is we get the survey, we synthesize it, and then we just know that we're going to have to ask some follow-up questions to get more detail so we can actually act on feedback. Because what's the worst thing in the world is you fill out a survey and then nothing happens, right? As the filler outer, it was just a complete waste of your time. However, if you fill out that feedback is acted on, oftentimes that feels really good. So you have to find a way to follow through and meet the needs of the people. It's almost like a contract. If you're asking someone to fill out a survey, there has to be some gold pot at the end of the rainbow for that group of people. It's not like every single thing is going to get acted on, but at least people should feel like it was productive, that they were heard, and that there's some sort of, okay, this is what we heard and this is what we're going to do.
Oh, man, yeah. Let me tell you. So one of the last surveys we did at Disney, we sent out a survey and we got some pretty, I would say, average response rate. So probably in the 20s or 30s respondents, which is okay. Like assuming that the bare minimum we would want is 10, which isn't great, but I think you could still extrapolate some good patterns if you see a lot of repeating pieces of feedback under 10 people. But this respondent, an engineering partner, asked for a gift card to fill out the survey. this straddles a little bit of the, these surveys aren't required, right? But we are working on the same team, working on the same products. But you're asking me to give you an Amazon gift card for 5 minutes of your time.
Yeah. And the thing that I try to remember and I try to communicate out is that everyone's busy. Everyone's got too much work to do. So, you know, you got someone breathing down your neck to ship something. And then all of a sudden some jokers on another team, you don't even know who they are asking you to fill out a survey for something. I can understand. And so that's where I think, following through and trying to do your best to show that the survey is not a waste of time, but will actually make their lives better. for everyone's benefit, your customer's benefit and yours, if you want to get more survey responses. And I would even argue that the amount of respondents is a data point in and of itself, because it, you can, I don't know, maybe research is going to slap me on the wrist. I believe you can infer the level of belief that this survey is worth people's time for the amount of people that fill it out. And so we've actually seen an increase in respondents for, especially on the engineering side, which makes sense because we put a lot more focus on engineering in the past, and that number has gone up significantly over the halves. You know, that's my hypothesis. I should probably run it by research first before I start saying things. But I found that to be an interesting data point for us.
Yeah, there's something there. Like if sentiment on whatever you're working on, whether it's documentation or the libraries, if the sentiment is low on it, then the return on the responses may be low. So there's something there. Like how can we get more involved and be more out there? And part of this, as you mentioned too, is immediately after we get these survey results, we need to do a top line report, probably like a slide deck, and report the findings out and be transparent about it, and be transparent about, you know, thanking people for their feedback and taking the time. But these are the things that we heard, and these are the things that we're going to hope to impact for next half. Really trying to pull out, while we can't address all of these things, we're going to be able to prioritize some very good pieces from your feedback. And the last, I always thought that when I joined this team, like I the first thing that I read was the last half survey, and I read through all of the free input boxes, and mind you, on the survey itself, we didn't ask anything about the component libraries. This was just a very wide sentiment survey, but there's very key patterns about component library coverage in the free text field. So you're able to just pick those pieces of feedback and act on them and solution them very easily. So it's really about trying to be open towards what the sentiment of your team and your product may be, and really trying to fix what works. And, you know, time is of an essence, but we'll never have.
Well, and that's the thing. Do you want to fix this with a scalpel, or do you want to fix it with a blunt force instrument where we just start throwing stuff at a wall and hope some of it sticks? Or do you just want to solve the problem or the problems that people are facing? And that can be really difficult, especially if you're a centralized team, if you're not embedded with feature teams. There is a level of separation, and you don't understand the day to day as well. Just, you can't, you're not in it with them on a daily basis. And so that disconnect can obviously, well, not can, it will disconnect your point of view as to how the system is working for folks on a day to day basis, unless you are doggedly working to circumvent that through research interviews, through embedding, through surveys, through anything and everything to make sure that you stay in touch with your customers.
Yeah, some pieces of feedback that we've gotten in the past was ease of use based. So I'm not sure which is the right thing to use. So it's a similar patterns and having to document what's the difference between a card versus a tile. They could be used interchangeably, but what is the point of view and when do we suggest using one thing or the other? Another thing was information architecture of the system inside of the tool. So we've gotten a lot of feedback in the past about that and simplifying that. There's another question that we have in the SUS survey about complexity. And that one's a little bit of one to unpack with a follow-up interview. Is like, the question is, the system is unnecessarily complex. So that was like on a Likert scale, 1 to 5. And if that was rated a 5, then we would dig in and try to understand what portions of this is. And then this sort of leads to, we do have a interest in learning about what's the entry point of how you get into the system, whether it's through documentation, whether it's through the libraries, whether it's through, it could be through code as well. Really trying to understand that. And that's where I'm looking to dig deeper with the follow-up interviews and really trying to follow from, this is more of like a, from a qualitative standpoint, follow the path on and just watch, sit back and watch and see how folks engage.
Yeah. My dream is to have a UX researcher on our team, just focused on this the entire time to understand the day-to-day at a super granular level of engineers and designers and their relationship with the system. You know, the full kit and caboodle, research interviews, you know, journey maps, everything. Because I know we're missing stuff. We just, like, a survey is great, but it's broad and it's twice a year. You know, it's the day that survey ends, something may change and now you're out of the loop again. And so ideally we would have a researcher just focused on this. We do try to have our team run interviews with designers and engineers, but given all the myriad of other things that we need to work on, it just, there isn't always enough time for it. But that's the limitation of a survey, is you see these things and you just, okay, but why, how? I don't know how to act on these things all the time. I know we need to act on it. I just don't know what in particularly we need to act on it. So that's another reason to make friends with your research team. Cause if you can find a way to work with them, for them to run some research interviews, to dig deep in some of these things, they're likely going to do a better job getting to those really helpful insights than someone who isn't a researcher.
Yeah, I have a different spin. That'd be preferable, right? There is value, I think, in the designers on the design systems team, the maintainers seeing the issues themselves, because I've seen in the past lots of doubt on questions, right? So, and we've talked about this too, like you and I on the podcast, is like, hard to use. Why is this hard to use? Is it because like you don't know the tool? Is it because you didn't spend time to learn the tools? Or is it really, you know, truly, is it hard to use, or is it too, like, more complex than it needs to be? Like, I find that's probably more of the case. And as maintainers and practitioners of design systems, obviously we're going to make things as flexible and scalable, utilizing the nth degree of said tools, but that may not be as simple for, you know, product designers to understand. So how do we get them there? And I think that's the sort of basis on how we could build better education and better documentation. We don't know this until we really get the feedback, because we assume that if we could use it and you could use, like, I could use it, you could use it, why can't this product designer on this other team?
Yeah. And I think that is the risk of a centralized team. And keep in mind, I am the biggest supporter of centralized teams at Pinterest, but there are risks, and that is, you know, being separated. And then if you don't check the idea of, well, we know better than them, they just need to do what we tell them to do. That is, be ready for pain if that type of thinking takes hold. Davey, I completely agree. Having each person on the team, engineers included, observe these things, I think, is really critical. And I think whether you have a researcher on the team or not, you should have team members observe. The challenge is, if you don't know how to ask the questions right, if you're asking leading questions, you can go down an early path. I do think designers and engineers absolutely can do research, but they may need a little bit of education, a little bit of guidance from a research team, where they do that for a living. They eat that for breakfast. But yeah, I don't think, Davey, I completely agree with you that I don't think it's probably the best path to just have a research dossier that lands on the systems team and, like, this is what you need to do, because there will be a disconnect there. I think, you know, sitting in on those interviews, hearing what people say, is going to be really important to have folks believe it.
Yeah, I'm just imagining a researcher coming in and saying, you know, your salt documentation or your geo documentation, you totally need it rewritten. And we need you to double the amount of pages. And I'm just thinking about the team's point of view. It's like, what? We need to double the amount of pages? We need to rewrite all this? Let's get a writer in here instead of a research. Like, then you're really trying to understand like what the directives are and the suggestions. But maybe it just it comes down to just writing and improving on the language and consistency of the documentation,
yeah,
and the content around there. So, yeah, it'd be great to extend and find more. I think this is the user interview portion of this back half of the survey. I think is where some of like the insights, the really true insights will be. If we got 10 respondents, whatever, that's fine. Like, well, I'll get 20 respondents next time, and then I'll get like 100 respondents like someday eventually. But I'm looking to with X number of respondents, I'm looking to try to talk to about five of them for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, and then really try to understand, like I said, mentioned doing like the qualitative approach, and it's almost like the diary study approach. Like that would be the most preferable. But then I would probably have to see if I could pay these folks, but really try to understand like during the life cycle of maybe a sprint. So we would have to time this diary study for when someone's in the discovery process or working through concepts. How do you engage with the system? Do you engage with it on your own? Do you solicit assistance from the team? Do you talk to other designers within your pod that have familiarity? Do you attend office hours, for instance, for extra feedback? What are the different points of engagement with the team? And really try to see if, you know, we're able to meet their needs. And I think this specific one that I'm running, this half is going to be about this Figma component libraries. We're going to run another one probably at the end of the midway next year, midway this year is right now, about documentation, and then really trying to pair the two up and see where the gaps are with integrating each other. But would love to get in the habit of just running surveys quarterly that are different, and then really trying to repeat the same ones on an annual basis.
Yeah, I do think having repetition is important because you can start to suss out patterns with that. So one of the things that had been burning a hole in my brain is, you know, what are the factors for designer sentiment, and can we correlate sentiment and other factors, like does it speed up your workflow? Is it easy to use? Is there, you know, essentially like a love language for designers that will ultimately lead to better overall sentiment? And in the past half's survey, we called a shot and we said we think these two factors are the primary, like the leading indicator for overall sentiment. So next half, we're going to focus on those two things. And bingo, it worked, which was amazing. That's like the best. It's like the best feeling in the world, like a huge dopamine rush when you crack the code. And it was, you know, we focused on two factors and we saw a major bump in overall sentiment associated with those two lifting as well, which, so that goes back to the scalpel, where if we just fix these two things, we can see gains, as opposed to trying to fix everything. And then if you try to work on everything, nothing moves much. So that's another value of consistently asking the same question, because you can see those things change over time. You can see trends and see how all those different factors relate to each other.
Yeah. Putting the design leadership head on, I would assume our design leaders would ask, why don't you just move the three levers at the same time. Well, why don't you move up? Why don't you move up code quality? Why don't you move up documentation? Why don't you move up the component libraries? Why don't you just, if you see these are issues, just move the dial. You could just put your hand and move all the dials at the same time, but that's not realistically how it works.
That's when you ask for headcount. We'd love to. And here's how many people we need to do that. And that's the challenge, right? Is everything costs money and we would love to do everything, but we only have so many cycles. And redlining our team is not an option. So this is how much throughput we have. This is what we can do. Let's just make sure that based off of what we can do, we make the most of it. And if leadership wants more, great. Here's the headcount. Here's the team size we'd need to accomplish those things.
Yeah. One last bit for a wrap that came top of mind is I think the surveys are really good to understand whether a specific initiative has succeeded or failed. And especially when they're given in, once a half, like you suggested, the memory of whether something succeeded or failed is still top of mind. So I think that there's a little bit of humbleness to take in when you're listening to really understand, like if you do get feedback on, let's say, a method that you did your documentation that didn't work, it's okay to pivot and it's okay to just take the feedback and say, well, we tried this thing for this half. We got feedback. It didn't work. And the colleague of mine, Felix, had mentioned like that there's a certain point where there's this sunk cost fallacy, right? And understanding it's still better to stop right now, given that you spent a half on it versus doing the same thing for another half and getting the same feedback in a survey after a year.
Absolutely. If these ideas are precious to you, you're going to have your heart broken. It's that you got to focus on the outcomes. Don't focus on the approach because things change so quickly. And even, the things that worked yesterday may not work tomorrow. And so that's the other challenge is this is a constantly moving target and you may have the perfect solution for something, and then team changes, priorities change, dynamics change, and all of a sudden that's weighing you down and you gotta jettison it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you like it, doesn't matter if you worked hard on it. It matters whether it's working or not. And so just taking a heartless approach to these things typically leads to better outcomes and less anguish.
Yeah, and always remember that even if you don't launch said thing, or if like the experiment or pilot that you did not go to your liking, or did not or failed, that's a really hard word to say and to let sink in. You're still learning from it, and you're still moving the ball forward because you did try this, and you're getting data, and you're really trying to put yourself out there to understand your designer or your engineer consumer. So. That's a great tidbit. We're at over 30. So thank you, PJ, again for a good conversation. Very good feedback.
Yeah, it was fun. And morning with coffee, it was energetic.
Yeah, we may have to try this one again. Thank you.
Yeah.